speaking today about our benchmarking report, which is this big, massive thing that normally comes in a bound volume. It's about 260 pages, real behemoth of a resource. We produce this in partnership with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It comes out every other year, and the most recent report that we released was in April of 2014, this year. So hopefully I can... There we go. I have no relationships to disclose about this report. So the benchmarking project has been going on for several years now. We collect... It's sort of a census of biking and walking progress, and we seek to benchmark how the United States is doing on biking and walking with relation to certain health indicators. We look at all 50 states, including Washington, D.C., which is not a state, unfortunately. It's where I live. And the 50 most populous cities, as well as, new to the report, 17 select mid-sized cities. We use every national data source that makes sense to use that we can get our hands on. That includes census data, American Community Survey data, a lot of data from the U.S. Department of Transportation, fiscal data from transportation funding, and lots of health data. And then we also do original data collection. We have a survey that we put together and we give to state-level departments of transportation and city departments of transportation. And that covers lots of different stuff. It's a big pain to fill out, but people do it because they want to be included, covering funding levels, staffing, et cetera. And then the Alliance for Biking and Walking is actually a coalition of state and local bicycle and pedestrian advocacy organizations, and we maintain an extensive database of biking and walking advocacy organizations. So we're also able to look at things like funding levels at advocacy groups and membership levels to see if there are correlations there. So I'll just go through and highlight a few areas where we have been benchmarking progress and then a few interesting data points that we have uncovered in this process. So during these types of slides, what you're seeing here is the metrics that we're tracking and then the change from when we first started benchmarking back in 2005, 2006, up through the 2011, 2012 data, which was what was included in the most recent 2014 report. So overall, we're seeing movements in positive directions with regards to percentage of commuters who are walking and biking, still representing a relatively small amount of transportation when it comes to commuting, which is the best data that we have, unfortunately. So about 5% of commuters on average in large cities walk to work. About 1% of commuters in large cities bike to work. And I'll note, too, Kit mentioned that we're lacking really strong data on biking and walking trip options, and that's something that's really holding us back. So here you can see in the middle two columns there, it shows the number of commuters by these different modes, and then on the right-hand side, percent of all trips nationwide. The center two columns come from the American Community Survey, which is something the census does on an ongoing basis. It asks you to tell them how you most often got to work in the past week, and you're only allowed to choose one option. So if you bike to the bus, that's a bus trip, most likely, depending on how you choose to track it. There's another survey called the National Household Travel Survey that's done much more intermittently. It's only a national survey size, sample size, so we can't drill down to cities or states. And it asks you, it tracks families over the course of a week, and it covers like every single trip you take. It covers multimodal. So it's a much more robust data set, but unfortunately we're not able to drill down to the state and local level. So when I'm talking about commute numbers and mode share, I'm talking about ACS data. Here's a big picture snapshot of where people are most often biking and walking to work in U.S. states. States that are darker red and pink have more biking and walking mode share, and the grayer, browner states have less. Demographically, we're seeing a pretty even gender split between men and women in terms of walking, but a lot fewer, much fewer women biking to work. And here you can see that actually about 76% of work trips are taken on bikes are taken by men as opposed to women. And that share is growing, but slowly. We see a pretty even split as far as commuters who walk to work with regards to ethnicity and race. So on the left here, we have distribution of U.S. workers as a whole, and then on the right, how race and ethnicity split out about walking with regards to people who walk to work. And then we see the same with income. For the most part, more people in lower income brackets tend to walk to work as opposed to biking or driving. But it's more or less an even split across income. public health, we're seeing, this should come as a surprise to approximately no one in this room, that we have issues with obesity, we have issues with diabetes and high blood pressure. Generally, things are moving in a positive direction, but very, very slowly. So more adults, we've found over time, are getting their minimum recommended levels of aerobic physical activity, and fewer people, or sorry, more people are struggling with diabetes and high blood pressure. And what we were really interested to look at is whether there's a relationship between the percentage of people who are biking and walking to work in a state and public health outcomes. So here we see a positive relationship between the percentage of populations in a state who are walking and biking to work and the percentage of a population meeting recommended weekly physical activity levels. So those orange dots are physical activity levels. The gray line there is the percentage of population walking or biking to work. As you can see, this graph is lined up in order of least biking and walking to work to most biking and walking to work. And then the green line is that positive trend line showing the positive relationship between the two. And then when you look at the negative health indicators, we see the exact opposite relationship. So again, states are organized in the same order here. That gray line is showing percent of population walking or biking to work. And this time the little orange dots are percentage of the population with obesity, adult population with obesity. And we see this reverse trend line showing that if you live in a state where more people walk and bike to work, then you're less likely to be obese. The same is true with adults who have been told they have high blood pressure and adults who have been told they have diabetes. Safety, too. Overall, we're seeing lower percentages. We're seeing more people walking and biking, and we're seeing the numbers of biking and walking fatality going down. What we're particularly concerned about, though, is we've seen a recent uptick in the percentage of U.S. roadway fatalities that are bicyclists and are pedestrians. So here is a look at that. It's super zoomed out, so it's sort of hard to see, but what you're looking at here is the pedestrian fatality rate over time. So from 1980 to about 2011, we're seeing this really nice downward slope overall and then this little uptick recently. So that's something that we'll need to address collectively. Similar pattern with bicyclist fatality rates, although smaller numbers, from 1980 to 2010, a nice downward slope. The overall trend is downward, and we're seeing a recent uptick at the end. Kit mentioned earlier that there might be a safety in numbers phenomenon with bike share, and we posit that there is a safety in numbers phenomenon with walking and biking more generally. So in this graph, we see, this is looking at the 50 most populous cities in the United States. They're ordered here from least walking to work to most walking to work. So Fort Worth all the end, all the way at the left-hand side, very few people walking to work. Boston, which is where I'm from, lots of pride, all the way on the right side. And then the orange dots here is the pedestrian fatality rate. So that's number of fatalities per people walking to work, as a portion of people walking to work. And there's this reverse trend line again. So this is showing that the cities where there are more people walking to work are also the cities where it's safer to walk. And the same is true with bicycling. This time the cities are ordered in order of least biking to work to most biking to work. And again, we're seeing that the cities where more people bike to work are also the cities where there's a lower bicyclist fatality rate. In our survey, we take a look at funding, both federal funding for biking and walking and funding from the state and the local level. The per capita federal transportation dollars that go to biking and walking has sort of inched up very gradually over time. At the time of our report, we were spending about $3.10 per person on biking and walking, which is still pretty small, and that represents about 2.1% of our overall federal transportation budget. And then city funding is about 3.3% of overall funds. This represents a pretty crazy disparity. So the National Household Travel Survey tells us that about 11.4% of all trips are taken by bicycle or on foot. That doesn't just count commuting, that's all trips. And a shocking 14.9% of roadway fatalities are pedestrians and bicyclists. And yet, we're only spending 2.1% of federal transportation dollars on biking and walking projects. We're also seeing that more and more cities are choosing to build bicycle infrastructure and pedestrian infrastructure like we're seeing here. So this is a protected bike lane. This is where I live in Washington, D.C. we're seeing over time more and more cities are putting in more bicycle facilities per square mile, more bicycle parking spaces, and more bike racks on buses, which is great. So in the last report, we found that there were about 1.6 miles of bicycle facilities per square mile in the largest cities in the U.S. We also take a look at bike share. This graph is actually made before Citibike launched, so this is showing the number of bicycle checkouts from 2011 to 2012. Washington, D.C. was winning, and then we quickly got blown out of the water by the Citibike program in New York City, which has just had an astronomically wonderful number of trips. And we also look at trends in connecting biking and walking to transit. The way that we generally think about this is that you have the very core station area, which needs to be a very walkable and pedestrian-friendly place. You have a lot of bike parking. And then the primary catchment area is where people will tend to walk to the station if you make it safe and accessible to do so. And that's where it's really important to prioritize pedestrian accommodations and infrastructure. And then the secondary catchment area is where people will bike to the station, provided it's safe and accessible to do so. So when you're drawing this, it's about a 3-mile radius of the secondary catchment area. That's where you should be making sure that there's really good bicycle infrastructure in place. And finally, in the benchmarking report, we look at advocacy organizations. So like I said, the Alliance is primarily this coalition of advocacy groups. We like to call ourselves the all-powerful biking and walking lobbies. And if you want these temporary tattoos on your wrists or your biceps, I have them here, and you can grab some from me. So going back in time, in 1998, which is when, just after the Alliance was formed, there were just a handful of these groups who were working on bicycle and transportation and pedestrian accommodation and legislation in their states and communities. In 2014, this is what we're seeing. So we've seen a lot more organizations that are really dedicated to making sure that walking and biking have a voice in the legislative process, and that there's someone making sure that transportation projects, that folks who are planning transportation projects are considering bicycle and pedestrian accommodation. And we've seen a lot of growth in the number of organizations. In particular, we've seen a lot of growth in the number of staff. So this sort of lime green, really light key lime top line here is the number of full-time equivalent staff at state and local bicycle and pedestrian advocacy organizations. And this just means that it's more people's full-time jobs to be advocating for biking and walking. And that could mean education, it could mean straight advocacy, it could mean safe routes to school programs. So these are really organizations that public health practitioners should be looking to partner with. We did compare the percentage of population walking or biking to work with the capacity of advocacy organizations, and we found a loose relationship with Seattle and Portland really knocking everyone else out of the water here. So again, these are the 50, the largest cities in the United States that have bike or pedestrian advocacy organizations lined up in order from highest percentage of population walking or biking to work on the left to lowest on the right. And then there are some metrics that demonstrate their advocacy organization's capacity in the bar chart. And it tends to be the case that organizations are located in places where a greater percentage of the population walks or bikes to work. And again, that's not a causation so much as a correlation. So that's all. I would encourage folks to download the benchmarking report on our website, bikewalkalliance.org. Feel free to get in touch with questions, and we've got little postcards over here next to the tattoos to remind you where you can download this report. Thanks very much.
At this time, I'd like to invite our four presenters up to sit up here and address some questions. Does anyone have any questions for any of the four presenters?
Thank you. this is a fairly new program, and obviously there are many kinks to be worked out. I would add one of the criticisms of BikeShare is that recently I saw an example of a video from Seattle where they said, and look, no car space has been taken for BikeShare. It's all on the sidewalk. Well, as a pedestrian proponent, I have a little bit of an issue with that, too. So I think that as any new program rolls out, we always have kinks. And it's the job of the citizens and the advocates and the professionals to work together to identify how to solve these problems. And we have brilliant minds. We can do that. I don't personally have answers for the questions that you have asked, other than to encourage there to be first a recognition of the problem, and the right team members need to come together to solve the problem, and they need to keep the public informed.
Makes sense. Thank you. Yes?
Another question for you, Kit. Could you speak any further in your presentation on the Boston BikeShare and the equity side of it? Because I have heard some other details about a hospital partially subsidizing at another conference, and I just wondered if you had any other information.
Nicole Friedman is the best person to contact about that, and she did an amazing presentation for us when we did one of our BikeShare webinars focused specifically on the equity issue. They, as I recall, they do have a partnership with one of the local hospitals. They have been able to make bike helmets available from any CVS, pharmacy, and Walgreens, which is like every corner in Boston practically, that you can go in and buy a helmet for $5. So that's really good. If you're a subsidized user, you pay $5 for the program, you also get a free helmet. It is an honor system. I think it's 400% of the poverty line is their criteria, but they have decided they don't want to be bogged down in the bureaucracy of tracking that. So they do say no full-time students in their program. I would say Boston and D.C. are the two cities to watch in terms of equity. And again, as we get more systems on the ground and more people are sorting this through, we're all going to have better solutions.
A question?
Yeah, a question for
Trevor
about the last slides.
Yeah, so I don't have the data at the top of my mind about how those compare. If you break out the walking mode share versus walking advocacy capacity and biking advocacy capacity versus biking mode share, let's talk after and we'll see if it's in here because this is 260 pages of deliciousness. But it's certainly been the case that bike advocacy organizations have grown at a faster pace than walking advocacy organizations. And I think that that's in part because bicycling offers such a clear identity in a city. You see someone on a bike and it is sort of a relatively unusual thing in the transportation landscape. And there's all this like gear associated with it and you have to buy similar things. It's sort of a consumer identity point. And importantly, the bike industry has also really stepped up to invest in advocacy because they recognize a connection between the success of their consumer products and the prevalence of infrastructure and education in a certain community. So the next step for the walking movement, I would say, will be figuring out how to continue to create and build sustainable organizations to do great pedestrian advocacy.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Dan?
So, Michelle, in your talk, you were mentioning that there were different things that you thought motivated people to become more physically active or walk. And some of those seem very proximal and some seem very visible. And so, you know, for example, I want to be around for my kids. It's a very distal outcome. And I just wondered, I guess just your thoughts as a behavioral
drive decision making much more than logic. They're two information processing systems in the brain, and we know that the closer in time point to a decision, the more that emotion is going to trump logic in the ultimate outcome. And so when you think about decisions to be physically active, or you think about sustainable physical activity, it's made up of, you know, hundreds, thousands, millions of decisions over a lifetime. And I think that's what we need to start thinking about, is what drives those decision points, not how do we get people to walk. We have to get much more specific. And so by making the reward from walking, helping people see. And the interesting thing that I found over time is that because our marketing of physical activity and walking has not asked people to notice how they feel, people actually don't necessarily notice it unless they accidentally discover it. So instead of making it serendipitous for people to discover how good they can feel in their mood, in their energy level, if our marketing showed them that they could do it, then the other thing that I didn't say that I think would be very helpful for the marketing of walking is that there's a huge effect in the persuasion science showing that when you say everybody's doing it, whether it's a positive or a negative behavior, it's very motivational. So we need to encourage that everybody's doing it, which it seems like the biking world might be doing too. So.
Anyone else? Well, thank you very. Oh, one more question. Go ahead.
To follow up on that, are these mostly like large department of health campaigns, or are they
One thing that these data did show is that people want to see people from their communities in the ad. So that is one thing that I would suggest to you, is to get people who are walkers in the community or who have decided to make it a part of their lives and show their pictures on the ad.
Kit would like to address one more comment on the pedestrian advocacy.
Well, related to walking and pedestrian advocacy, think of the word pedestrian. It's not a real sexy term. I mean, you know, alternative languages, it's kind of ordinary and boring. So a lot of the language is now turning to walking and rather than pedestrian safety. It's walking safety, the safety of people who are walking. So you're humanizing it. You're talking about individuals. The America Walks is a national organization very much like the Alliance for Biking and Walking, and focuses on advocacy groups that are working predominantly for pedestrian safety, greater walkability. And they have partnered with Kaiser Permanente, I believe, or let me pronounce it, Kaiser generally. Is it? Okay, thank you. On a new summit that they're doing, and they're beginning to get at some of these questions. So there's an Everybody Walks Summit that's scheduled for Washington, D.C. at the end of October of next year. I would encourage you to pay attention to that and participate in it if you can. I think that from the last conference that they had 2 years ago, they have the sessions up and available on their website. What's interesting to me, I mean, think about the opportunities. Mary Lauren talked about the bike companies really stepping forward and supporting advocacy, and it really wasn't until they did that. You know, I've unfortunately been around for a long time, so I remember the day when bike advocates struggled for any money at all. And now there are many companies like Planet Bike that give what percentage?
25%.
25% of their profits goes pumped back into advocacy. That is huge. Then why is New Balance, a shoe company, sponsoring the Hubway bike system? You know, why aren't they sponsoring, and I'm glad that they're sponsoring Hubway, but those poor pedestrians, you know, they're not even getting any money. So I think this is a huge topical issue, and it's one that APBP has struggled with and worked with America Walks. I'm a former America Walks board member, and there's no, because everyone is a pedestrian. You don't need special equipment to walk. You can walk.
So I'll stop. If anyone here can crack the nut of how to fund pedestrian advocacy, please do it.
Do it. We need you.
Well, I guess I was going to ask a question, so forgive me.
we're out of, oh, one more question. Left.
And the two, there's the largest bike and pedestrian advocacy organizations in the country, of the four largest groups in the country, two are multimodal, Transportation Alternatives in New York City and the Active Transportation Alliance in Chicago. So it's a really fruitful model for active transportation advocacy. When you bring modes together, it's very powerful to be able to go to decision makers and say that you're speaking on behalf of transit users, walkers, which is everybody, and bikers too.
Well, thank you all for spending this part of your afternoon with us. We have a good charge of things we all need to do. So thank you, and they'll be around for a minute or so if you have any other questions.